Men on Board, episode 21. Today, the category is Prolific Expansions. We're going to be talking about Carcassonne and Dominion. In our broader view, we're going to have a conversation about when to expand games. Hello, and thank you for downloading Men on Board. My name is Aaron.
This is Josh.
Jameson.
And I'm Matt.
If this is your first time listening, thank you for downloading again. And we are a podcast about board games. Just four friends sitting around the table chatting about games. Today, the conversation is going to be about prolific expansions. And we are defining this one as games with just a ton of content that's usually modular that you can add in, take out, just give your game a little bit more variety. That's kind of replacing things in the base set a little bit.
One thing we talked about too, although this doesn't necessarily apply to everything in the category, is the idea of just open expansions where there isn't really an end in sight from the publisher necessarily.
And even if they do announce an end in sight, they then lie and break that.
Yeah, you can never really believe what they say.
Thanks, Dominion.
We're going to start things off with a conversation about Carcassonne, and I think Matt's going to be explaining that one to us.
Carcassonne is a game from 2000 by Klaus-Jürgen Werde. It is for 2 to 5 players, but with expansion, it goes all the way up to 8. It is 30 to 45 minutes, and that time will swing wildly depending on how much expansion content you're using. It has art by Doris Mathaus, and it is currently being published by Z-Man Games. So Carcassonne is a game based around the famous French walled city, where players are attempting to score points by placing tiles on a communal map and adding their meeples to different features on the tiles that each feature scores differently. On each turn, players will go through 3 mandatory steps. First, they will draw a single tile from the stack and choose where to put it on the board. Tiles can be oriented in any direction, but can only be placed so that features on the edge of the new tile line up with a tile that's already been placed. After the tile is placed, the player has the decision to place a meeple on one of the tile's features. In the base game, you have options to go on a road, in a city, on a monastery, or in a field. This moment is the only opportunity you have to place a meeple on that tile, so it's an important decision as each player only has 7 meeples to use throughout the game. The final step is to score any feature that has been completed and gain back the meeple that was used to score that tile, or that feature rather. Play continues like this until every tile has been placed on the board. At the end of the game, players get a chance to score any meeples left on the board, but usually only for half the points that they usually would, and again, this depends on what feature the meeple was standing on. Because we're talking about expansions, the features on the tiles are the main source of expansion content for Carcassonne. Expansions add gardens, fairgrounds, special cities, farms, rivers, and loads of other things, and each comes with their own unique way of scoring. Expansion content can also add special meeples, like the abbot or the thief. There's a dragon and a pig, and each special meeple can only be placed in particular ways, but they offer more freedom for players to use their limited number of starting meeples. And that's all there is to Carcassonne.
I think for a lot of people, Carcassonne was the intro game, or one of the intro games for the more, for lack of a better word, sophisticated kind of board game that we play as a group. For me, I remember really distinctly going to my local game store. It was a place where I mostly played Warhammer, but there was like a lot of people played board games there too. And every once in a while, they would kind of loop us in. You know, I was a teenager, like 15 years old, and Carcassonne was one of the games that they let me play. And that was where I learned that there was more to board games than just Monopoly and Clue. That being said, I do think that the simplicity of it, while it's one of its biggest advantages, is also one of the things that makes it relatively easy for us to leave it behind. So I'm kind of glad that we can take a look at it again, because it's not a game I spent a lot of time thinking about.
You're right about that. I think when I first acquired it, I went on a little binge of playing it, because it's simple, it's light, it's a quick after dinner game if you want to play with your partner. It also travels really easily. So I remember Chris and I took it on a lot of trips and a lot of vacations. I lose at it every single time. every single time I lose at Carcassonne, for whatever reason, I'm just not good at it. It's nice, though. It has enough going on that it's a higher level of complexity than a simple Ticket to Ride or something, but I think you can still introduce it to a vast array of different level of gamers, and I think it has its place still in a beginning game collection.
Carcassonne was one of the first games I played too. I think it kind of sits there up on the shelf with Catan and Dominion as, I mean, Carcassonne is about as old as Catan is. It's been around for forever, but I think when you first play Carcassonne, it's nice and easy and simple, and I think the more you play it, it doesn't necessarily get more complicated. You don't kind of reveal that much more depth to the game, but I think as you become more skilled at how to strategically affect the other players at the table, the game takes on a different light. Once you realize that the importance of the game is to score all the same features that your opponent score, and not just, oh, I'm going to make my area over here and you build over there. I think the game takes a different light when you start getting into a little more competitiveness.
The depth of it is something I don't have strong feelings toward. I think Catan is a really interesting comparison. I know for a fact that there are people out there, families out there, who they maybe try Catan as the next step from Monopoly, Clue, and maybe Carcassonne is the same way, and then they just really adopt it and they play a ton of it. It becomes their family's game or their group of friends' game, and maybe they explore a little bit. Maybe the people playing Catan get Carcassonne, maybe the people who play Carcassonne get Catan. I do think that there is probably a level of complexity there that we might be missing, given that it's really easy to write it off as being a simple game. I do think that repeat play probably will show depth that maybe we write off initially.
So this is usually one that people talk about that they played very early on. I didn't play this one till more, I'd gone further into the hobby. So it didn't have as much charm for me as it did for other people. Like, I appreciate it. I appreciate the simplicity of the mechanics and how easily it flows. I appreciate what the board looks like when you're all done. But this isn't one that, it just doesn't have as much of a bite for me. So I don't love it as much as other people do. It's not that I dislike it. It's just that there's always games you're going to want to play more.
I think too, Aaron, you like new plays of repeated games, or you like deeper plays of games. So playing a game that I think is designed to be played over and over again by a family, or, you know, over the course of years or something like that, you kind of develop an internal rhythm to it. And I don't think you do that with a lot of games. And I don't do it as often either. But I think for gamers at that level, this is a great game for them. For me, it's kind of a one note. It hits its thing. I don't need to go back to it anytime soon. I wouldn't turn down a play of it, but I'm not going to seek it out to go play more of it, I don't think. No matter what expansion content comes for it, I think that the gameplay itself is enough that I don't care what you add to it. It's still the same game for me.
Yeah, I don't have any sentimentality toward this game at all. It's a game that I played when I was young, and it was one of those gateway games for me. But for me, I mean, really the normative experience as a 15-year-old or whatever was Twilight Imperium, and Carcassonne was just another game that we tried out along the way. And it kind of showed me the opposite end of that spectrum, too. I do kind of wonder if the current equivalent would be something we talked about in a recent episode with something like Splendor, where, I mean, maybe that's today's Carcassonne, where it can be a gateway hook. It isn't that deep, but it does have a level of complexity that rewards repeat play, rewards the same kinds of strategies, and that an individual group of people can get into, like, there's still meat there. It's just not really meat that I personally have much interest in devouring.
Well, turning the conversation over to the expansion content for Carcassonne, one of the expansions that I really like for it is the River expansion, because I love that player setup. I love that it gives you a starting point. I like the way that the river will wind and everything. I like the little simple rules about how the river can wind and the directions that it can't wind. It's so, like, small, and it's kind of different from the other expansions that change what the tiles are within the game itself, but I love that one for how it changes the start.
Yeah, it's now packaged with the game, and the rule book actually comes with a supplemental page. It doesn't even say, like, expansion. It just says supplemental rules, and it has the rules for the river on it.
The other nice thing about Carcassonne is that the entry price point is really low on it, and the expansion price point is really low on it, or at least it was. Since Z-Man has took it over, that could have changed a little bit. But still, I think the expansions were, like, under $10 sometimes. I've seen them for in-game stores. So if you're looking for a game that you can add more and more to, You certainly can with Carcassonne. I question whether it's necessary at the end of the day. I think I would move on to a different game. But for a tile laying game like this, like I like the map building component. What always gets me hung up, though, is I feel in the game I lack agency for whatever reason. The random drawing and force play of a tile in that turn, I know it's adapting to what you get, but I don't think I can plan out, by the end of the game, I'm usually just hoping for something and often not getting it in order to fulfill a city or to complete, you know, a structure on the board. And for whatever reason, I'm just not great at knowing what's left in the deck of tiles and what I should be holding out for and what I shouldn't be.
I think the illusion of agency is something that we really seek in the games that we enjoy. I think Carcassonne is, like, it's not as blatant as something like Life or War, where you see exactly the same deterministic thing play out. But I do feel like a lot of the games where we think we have agency, it's actually just being disguised. You know, the determinism is just being disguised with a little bit more chaos. There's more moving parts, but the outcome is still kind of, you're still kind of forced into things. I'm thinking about games we're talking about on our next episode, and I know there's certainly situations where I would feel exactly the same as I did playing Carcassonne, where I really wouldn't have, one of my options would be cut off, and I would feel like I was really just maneuvered in this one direction. Now, Carcassonne makes that maneuvering very literal. You may not have any other options at all, as opposed to having a couple of good options and terrible options otherwise. But it's still, I wouldn't necessarily make that a criticism. And if anything, I think it can make it easier to teach the game to new players because they're just not allowed to do a lot of things.
So the topic of this is about expansion and about games with a lot of expansions. And Matt, I think you know more about this game and have better knowledge of what the expansions can bring than the rest of us do.
Yeah, I would definitely say that because I owned a few of the expansions. I think we'll see this again later with Dominion. The expansions are a lot of just more of the same. They do offer different features, and the features score differently, but you're still just repeating that same process of, do I put a meeple down here now, or do I abandon it and never score that feature again? To Josh's point of the tiles, one of the expansions, I think it's the Market, maybe that's the name of the expansion, has like six tiles in it, and whenever one of those tiles is placed, you draw a bunch of tiles from the stack, and you basically kind of auction them off to the players, and that's your next tile. So it kind of puts a little bit of a slightly control, different mechanism into the game. And I like the robber. The robber, I think it's the robber or the thief. It gives everyone a little thief meeple, and whenever a particular tile is drawn, everyone can put their thief on the score track next to another player's marker, and you're banking that the next time that player scores, they're going to score a lot of points, and however many points they score, you steal and also score them for yourself. So it kind of becomes this game of like, oh, I think Jameson's going to score the city that's going to give him a lot of points, I'm going to try to piggyback. Well, now all of a sudden Jameson has to decide, am I going to score that city that I can finish, or do I try to score some road for 2 points and screw Matt's thief over and he doesn't get to piggyback anything?
That's interesting.
Matt, for Carcassonne specifically, what made you choose the expansions that you chose?
Whatever ones were on the shelf at the store. This is actually a big problem I had with the Carcassonne expansions. When I bought Carcassonne, it was shortly after Z-Man had acquired the rights to publish it. And at the moment, they were only publishing the base game. So the older versions of all the expansions were disappearing. And it's only been very slowly over a number of years that Z-Man has started to push out the expansions again. And whatever expansions I bought was purely limited by whatever the stores had, because if they had old editions, they were just left with whatever copies they had left. And then when the new expansions came out, then there was plenty of them. But at the time I was collecting, I think Z-Man only got up to like expansions 1 and 2. And then they randomly republished like expansion 6 or something, and not the ones in between. So that's totally what dictated which expansions I got.
There is a big box edition of this game. In fact,
every year.
Every year they release a big box edition, which doesn't always have the same content in it, which is...
Correct. It always has a varying content every year.
Fascinating and really curious to me in terms of releasing content. Like, literally there is a catalog of expansions available for this game series, and each year the publishers decide to put out a big box game and include maybe four or five of them, but eliminate some of the rest. So you can never get the entire catalog just by buying this. You still have to piecemeal it together through other means. I don't know of another game that does that, actually. That's a really strange...
Yeah, it's an interesting model.
I think it happens in video games sometimes, so you can...
Sure.
Like, that's the closest thing I can think of.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of our talk about expansions and the expansion content for these games will probably come more so in the comparison.
Yeah.
So why don't we switch over to our next game?
Cool.
So our second game today is going to be Dominion. Dominion was published in 2008 by Rio Grande Games, designed by Donald X. Vaccarino, and art by a whole bunch of people. Dominion is a deck-building game where players are all monarchs racing to expand their kingdoms by acquiring unclaimed lands, by hiring minions, constructing buildings, sprucing up your castle, and filling your treasury. There is no board in this game, but there is a common area with different piles of cards that players can buy on their turns to add to their decks. In the base game, there are four different types of cards. Treasure cards, which allow players to purchase other cards. Victory cards, which give players victory points at the end of the game. Curse cards, which negatively affect the player's score. And kingdom cards, which allow the players to perform a variety of actions. Every game, 10 types of kingdom cards are chosen, which provide a lot of different combinations and can really change up the game. Players all start with identical starting decks of cards, containing a few treasure cards and a few victory cards. At the beginning of the game, players draw a hand of 5 cards. A player's turn consists of 3 phases. Players begin with the action phase, where they can play 1 action card. Action cards can provide additional actions, which allow players to play multiple cards in a turn and chain different effects. Players then have a buy phase, where they can purchase a card from the common area with their treasure cards. Purchase cards are placed into the player's discard pile. Finally, during the cleanup phase, players discard all of their played and unplayed cards and draw a new hand of 5 cards from their deck. When a player's deck is depleted, they shuffle their discard into a new deck of cards, allowing the player to access the cards that they purchased. The game ends when either the pile of province cards, which are the highest point valued victory cards, is depleted, or when any 3 supply piles of cards are empty. Players then look through their decks and add up all the victory points listed on their cards. Whichever player has the highest total wins. 2 things right off the bat. 1, writing up that description and going through it made me realize that this truly is the original deck building game, and how talking about these rules is so obvious to, I think, almost everybody, because it's been incorporated into so many other games that it's really just become one of those mechanics that everybody knows.
It's not even a game unto itself. It's just a mechanic at this point.
Second, the theme that they claim is in the game, like reading that, I was like, oh, that's hilarious that that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, it has become its own genre, and it's inspired a ton of other games. And I think it's really important for that reason. One of the things that I did when I was preparing for this episode was look back to see when some of the other deck-building games that I kind of think of as milestones came out. And I think this was originally demonstrated at Origins in 2007 and then released in 2008. Ascension came out in 2010. Star Realms came out in 2014. These are games that take what was the entire meal with Dominion and then turn it into a central concept which they develop. And I think it's really easy to kind of pigeonhole Dominion as being just like a Citizen Kane, where it was incredibly groundbreaking at the time, but it didn't really innovate since then. And I do honestly kind of feel that way. I think there's some real criticisms of the game. The main one that I can think of being that there isn't a whole lot of player interaction, at least not meaningful player interaction. And you're sort of stuck doing what Aaron was describing. Like, there's this theme that probably felt pretty integral at the time, but now seems sort of pasted on, given that the mechanic has become kind of generic.
So first of all, I will say that this is probably my lowest rated game on BoardGameGeek. I really don't care for the game too much, but I try to stay a positive person, so I'm going to focus on the positive things.
We played it a lot at the beach house that one time.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of where my kind of burnt outness with this game comes from.
For sure.
Is this is one of the very first games I bought, and we played it the summer I got it. Josh and I played it so much.
We did. We taught it to Jenna Laura. We played the game.
It was just every night we were playing it, and it was fun. It really speaks to the quality of the game. It's just that as time has gone by, it's like if you had, like, when you're a little kid and there was like a favorite food you had and you ate it every single day, and then now when you think about it, it just makes you want to throw up because you ate it too much.
Yeah. Or it's almost like, I mean, maybe a better, for me personally, I still love pizza, but the pizza that I enjoyed as a child is completely different than the pizza I enjoy now. Like, occasionally I will go back to it, but I sort of expect more from it now. I want different toppings and different combinations. And without going too far down that road, I think that other games do what I liked about Dominion and like about Dominion better than Dominion does it. That being said, I don't think I've ever had an unfun game of it. I think I really enjoyed it every time that I played it. It's just that there was nothing to keep me coming back.
To Jameson's point of fun, I think fun with this game can swing wildly. I've had some games where I've really enjoyed it, that the makeup of the cards on the table made it super fun. You felt like you were doing cool things like chaining actions. You're like, look at me, I'm doing some really fun stuff. And then I've had other games of this where it is a slog for 2.5 hours because the cards you have out there just don't work that great together. So no one's chaining the money that they need. And it feels like you're just like, I'm just going to buy stuff up from the piles and end the game.
The choice of what expansions to play in Dominion is so integral and so fundamental, maybe more than any other game that I've played. And if you make a bad combination of if you choose a bad combination of cards, a bad combination of expansions, you can double play time. You can massively increase the number of negative experiences that people are having. You can make individual transactions either way more complicated or way more simple. And I think there's just a lot of pitfalls there.
So I think another big thing that brought about my souring on this game was that Jameson said early on that there's not a lot of player interaction, and I felt the same way when I first started playing it. So when I was trying to figure out which expansion to get next, I read that Intrigue had the best player interaction at that time, and to get Intrigue. That was one of the biggest mistakes ever made, because that introduced such a mean element into the game that I completely was turned off by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think, to speak to James' earlier point, because I will talk about Intrigue in a second, because it also ruined my gaming experience with this game as well. To Jameson's point before of the deck building and how you construct the deck, I think the publishers of this game or the marketing team would have you believe that in doing so is the real gameplay. Like, it is your job as a player to analyze the 10 cards that are available to you and find a path to victory. And that, to me, just isn't that fun. It's fine. I know we do it in a lot of other games, but for some reason, when it's laid out in that linear fashion where it is, do buy X to get Y to get an extra action so that you can get Z and then, you know, work your way up to the ultimate goal. That's all this game is to me. And that's fine. I don't dislike it. I agree. I've never had a bad play of it in the base game rules. But once you get to that, you're really not making a new game. I don't care what they tell me that the cards are changing up. To me, it doesn't change that much that I'm always just finding a route to get to a province card, in the essence of what this game boils down to for me. I think when you start adding in the expansion content, they've done some really creative things. I don't dislike the expansions. I agree with you, Aaron, that I think Intrigue is not the expansion I would get next, because I think it's one of the most dislike the other expansions that are out there. But they do add enough content. I don't think they all necessarily work well together. I don't think they're all well thought out. And I think they just add a lot of bulk to a game that I don't know if it gives more to what I'm looking for in this game.
So to the Intrigue point, yeah, I owned every expansion of Dominion up to the point where they said they were going to stop making expansions, except for Intrigue, because I just kept holding off on buying it because I knew that type of take that attitude was not what I wanted in Dominion. On the opposite end of that, you have Prosperity, which I think is the most fun expansion, because everything about it is excess. Every card in that box is about taking extra actions, extra money. There's even more victory point cards that are cost even more to buy. Everything's just about blowing it up. And whenever I use Prosperity, I feel like I'm actually doing something. Even if I'm not doing that much more than other expansions, it at least puts a happy tone on the game of like, I'm getting somewhere. Like, I'm actually throwing like 12 cards to the table and making a show of my turn, instead of I have 3 gold, I buy a silver, I'm done. And I really like that about Prosperity. I think an expansion that you guys might not have as much experience with, because I immediately shelved it, was Alchemy. Because Alchemy introduces a second currency type. instead of just money, you have to get like alchemy vials to buy specific cards on top of money. That it would be like one gold plus an alchemy vial. And the creators of the game have actually said when they released Alchemy, their plan was to do multiple currencies. But after they pushed the game out, they realized that introducing a second currency was a huge mistake, and Dominion can't really sustain players trying to accumulate multiple types of currency at the same time, because you're never going to end up with multiples of multiple types of currency in your hand to buy a specific card. And they've actually shelved that idea completely after Alchemy, which is why I never play with it, because I found that everyone tended to ignore the cards that needed the other resource because it was just clutter. You would get a whole hand of the other resource and be like, this is useless because I have no money.
I remember playing a game with you, Matt. I think it was Dark Ages, and it had just a really kind of depressing vibe to it. It felt like just slugging uphill, being like, oh, we're going to get to that two pieces of silver at some point. And I just remember that expansion to me particularly felt like, let's just make this as punishing and difficult as possible. Nothing will go your way. Do the best you can.
Yeah, Dark Ages is personally punishing. There are definitely cards that make you interact with players and punish them, but your deck doesn't start with estates. You start with no victory points, and you have to come back. It does, however, introduce upgrade cards, where if you have a card and you do a particular kind of action, like if you can manage to trash the card, you then get a better card from the market. It's something like the beggar becomes like the shop owner or something. Like somehow trashing the beggar makes him become a shop owner. Like the cards evolve by doing particular things with them, which is something I liked.
I think part of being the first of its kind meant that a lot of these flaws were things that they had to learn by doing. One of the reasons why a game like Star Realms is so excellent is because it was able to learn from the mistakes that Dominion made, the mistakes that Ascension made. Like, the trash mechanic in Star Realms is something that theoretically could have been, if you wanted to have a game with multiple currencies, it would be a way of making that much more doable. And because the mistake had already been made earlier on by another company, I mean, the entire game here has become the core of other games. You have games like Big Book of Madness, where there is a deck building element, but it's part of this complex cooperative monster fighting game. You have High Command, which is like an RTS deck builder, and it still uses the same central concepts of almost drafting cards from a shared market, except it, instead of having a shared market, each player has their own market. There are these great little innovations, either by adding on different ideas or by solving problems that other games were able to do. And I think structurally, Dominion was unable to, just by virtue of being where it was when it was, change in some really important ways.
Yeah, but that being said, I still think that Dominion is a game that everyone should play. I don't say that about a lot of games, yeah. But I think that Dominion teaches those very basic deck building principles, like that idea of when you're going to switch over from buying action cards into buying point cards and trying to balance things out and making sure that you have the idea of what's in your deck so you're not bogging yourself down. And I think Dominion does a good job of teaching those principles of balance and of pacing, which is why even like to this day, I think it's something that has a place that people should play that you're not going to pick up when you're playing the more modern deck builders because they add other things on top of it.
I agree.
I just don't want to be the person that plays with them.
Honestly, no,
you're right.
I think I might disagree. I think that it can be that game. I don't think that it has to be part of the canon in that way. For me, like the game that filled that part of the deck builder intro experience was Ascension. And I think I got most out of it that what Aaron is talking about getting out of Dominion. I think that a lot of the same lessons are there. There is additional stuff, but the kinds of things that were added are the kinds of things that are in every other deck builder I can think of. And then Star Realms would be the other one I would throw out. Sure, there are things like the fact that that player health is like it is the clock in that game. It puts this hit point system front and center where it just wouldn't be with Dominion. In theory, that's another mechanic that would have to be planned around. In practice, it means that there's a tempo that's very clearly stated to the players. They have a really clear sense of when the game is going to begin and when it's going to end. And I feel like that might actually be a better way to introduce people to the genre. So I actually, long story short, I don't know how important Dominion is today.
You might be right. So one of the reasons we put these games with one another is that both of these are games that have a ton, I mean, literally a ton of expansion content that have come out for them. And I would argue, and I think one of the things we all feel relatively similarly about, is that the expansion content for these games is a lot of bulk. It's a lot more of the same. And I'm not convinced that it's necessary. I think the games have a really good basic gameplay level, and then they just have added more and more onto themselves to become almost bloated game systems that I don't know serve their original function anymore.
A difference between the two, and something I like about Dominion compared to Carcassonne, is Dominion, when you look at all the expansion content, it is very easy to sort all the expansion content because it all goes back in its box and all the little decks go in their little slots. While I find with Carcassonne, all my tiles got shoved together because I just throw them all in a bag together. So every time you buy an expansion, all the tiles just get lumped together in the big bag together. So the expansions are kind of always there with Carcassonne. It's just a matter of if I would teach the game to someone new, I would be like, ignore that feature, ignore that feature. We don't play with that feature, but we are playing with that one. Pay attention to those. Or if someone drew a tile with one of those on it, I'd just be like, throw that tile aside and pick a new one. So I was always a little miffed that Carcassonne was so hard to separate out the expansions. It was like they wanted me to always use all the content, which is a lot of small one-off rules to remember, even if you really know the game, while Dominion is nice and compartmentalized.
I think part of what makes that work for Dominion too is just that the marketplace itself is a lens, and it has a limited number of spaces. It makes you think about what expansions you want to include, and it presents pretty much all of the elements of all the expansions that are going to be in play at once. There's less to remember because you're essentially just choosing about a different what would the vocab be here? A different selection of
assortment.
There's different stuff on offer, but it's all pretty front and center. Tableau isn't quite right.
It's a large library to choose from.
Yeah, it's library might actually be the best word to describe it. Like, you can look and see what stuff is. There's not much randomization coming in at the beginning. Whereas with Carcassonne, the more you pile on, the more complex it gets, the more little cycles there are. And a lot of that stuff isn't intuitive. With Dominion, it's all up front. So I think that is one of the strengths there.
Yeah, and going off what you were saying, I think that's one of the things I really like about the Dominion expansions, is that you can control what kind of game you want it to be. Like what Matt was saying with adding in prosperity cards, it makes it a very different game than adding in intrigue cards. And I like that. I like that the rules for Dominion, how they lay out different ideas for setting up and saying, if you want a game that's like this, play with these cards. If this is your first game, play with these cards. I like that they put that thought in, and I like when any game does something like that.
It's also just, it's not that problematic to clean up afterward. Like a lot of other games with tons of expansions, especially modular expansions, separating them out afterward and rebagging them, or in Matt's case, just kind of hurling everything in because it's not worth separating it at that point. It's not so much of an issue here. Everybody can just kind of take apart their deck and sort it back into the card type. It's much easier to clean up than a lot of other games with notable expansions.
I will agree with you. I will say that storing Dominion is a pain in the butt, because I think each box maintains itself, and they aren't standalone boxes, so it's not like you can be like, I'm just going to take out this box right now and play with it. You still need the province cards or whatever, which they could easily include in any of the boxes.
Well,
you didn't have to go fishing for them.
The base cards do have their own box now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can buy just the money and the province cards separately. So if you buy any of the big box expansions,
you can
buy the cards that you need from the base game. And they come in a little, like a little deck box that's like 3 inches by 5 inches. Like, it's like an index card.
That's great. That's a really good change.
Yeah, that is a really nice change. So you don't have to, because before you'd always be like, I have to bring the base game plus whatever expansion. While now you can buy the little setup cards, I guess you could call them. plus whatever expansion you want to lug around.
Hmm. Those are also the cards that are going to get worn out first. Like, if you are, if you do love Dominion and you play a ton of it, those are the cards that are just going to deteriorate, especially when you have a game that's going on 10 years old.
I think we mentioned a little bit about which expansions we really liked out of Carcassonne. Which expansions do we really like out of Dominion?
I liked Seaside a lot.
Yeah, that'd be the one I would say, too.
I don't know what about it specifically, but I just thought it was the most well-put-together expansion. It added just enough new content. It kept it fresh. It had some slight different gameplay tweaks that you could play towards, but it kept the nature of the original game, I think. And I think it had the best artwork.
Well, Seaside offers the delay cards.
Yeah.
That cards that you play this round for one effect, and then it stays on the table, and then at the start of your next turn, offers a different effect. So yeah, that was different. To the artwork point, something that another thing that miffed is my word of the day. Something that miffed me about the art of Dominion, and I guess this is true of like any collectible game, the art on every card is designed by different people.
It's very inconsistent. So
there's no consistency between the card artwork, which makes some, like, and it swings from like hyper realistic to there's some cards that look like anime. Like, it's just a full gambit of varying artworks, and it always bugged me. I guess there's a side of it that's cool that they constantly ask different people to do the art for their games, but visually, it's kind of all over the place.
Well, it has that Magic the Gathering inspiration, I think. I mean, I think it borrows heavily from that sort of card design, even in just the way the cards are laid out.
Seaside is good, but Prosperity, we've talked positively of it so far. Prosperity is really fun.
I liked Hinterlands too.
Hinterlands is fun. Mm-hmm. That's if you like playing a deck builder where your deck gets really big,
yeah,
Hinterlands is the expansion because you're exploring the hinterlands of your kingdom and you're constantly finding new land and new stuff and your deck gets really big. To the theme point, I think the theme of every Dominion box fits what's in the box. Like, if you play Prosperity, your deck is going to be prosperous. And if you play Hinterlands, your deck is going to be huge because you're exploring. And I think there actually is a nice tone to every box that matches what the theme of the box is.
Switching over to Carcassonne really quickly. Matt, did you ever play the Catapult expansion?
No, but I really wanted to because it seemed like fun nonsense.
Yeah, that's one thing I do like about Carcassonne is that they're not afraid of a kind of like pushing the silliness a little bit.
The Catapult expansion, you literally catapult things onto the board, and where they land is where they land.
Isn't there like a Carcassonne Santa Claus edition too? There's like a North Pole. There's a lot of Carcassonne editions. I mean, a lot. But I'm pretty sure there's a North Pole edition that has Santa and little elves in it.
They've reskinned it a few times. There's like a Pacific Islands one and an early America themed one. I don't know how much it really changes about the gameplay other than making the art different.
So do we want to move on to talk about recommendations for other games with a prolific amount of expansions?
My recommendation would be Arcadia Quest, which is it uses tiles, it uses miniatures, it has up to four players competing in what can be a campaign. And each miniature can kind of be its own expansion in much the same way that putting in a new kind of card in Dominion changes the nature of it. There's a lot of different characters that can add a lot of different vibes, and it all fits together really well. It's colorful and fun, and I've played a lot of it with a lot of people in this room.
My recommendation is going to be for a game that I don't super love, but I think everyone should play, and that's Munchkin. Munchkin's just crazy, crazy RPG simulator fun where you get your character and you race, you class them, you throw on a bunch of armor, you try to kill some potted plants, and everyone else's job is to give that potted plant teeth and horns and spitting venom to murder you in the process. There's loads and loads of content that makes the game super complicated and weird and convoluted, but that's exactly what happens to an RPG, especially like MMOs. Like, things just keep getting added with expansion content and you just can't keep it straight. And Munchkin does a great job emulating that. So I think everyone should try it. I don't recommend falling down the rabbit hole of buying everything.
Yeah, rent, don't buy.
So in keeping in Matt's vein of games that we would recommend but don't necessarily love, my recommendation is Smash Up. So Smash Up is a game where It also has a ton of expansion content because they just keep adding new races and new decks. But essentially, you take two decks of cards, smash them together, make the best deck of cards that you can, and your goal is to conquer space stations or bases to earn victory points by playing your cards in a strategic manner. It's very simple. It can be very light. It can also take a very long time depending on how the cards get played out. But I think the whole crux of that game is just finding unique, funny, interesting combinations. So there might be like space and like cowboy ninjas or something like that that each have their own distinct style of playing, and then finding the best way to make those two decks work together is really interesting.
And my recommendation is going to be for Legendary, the Marvel deck building game. It's another deck building game. It's plays with a board, though. You're building a deck in order to fight different enemies. It's all based in the Marvel Comics universe, except for the one Spider-Man Homecoming expansion that's based in the MCU, and instead of using the comic art, they use the stills from the movie, and it's a terrible selection of characters, and I get really mad just thinking about it. It's the only one I don't have, and I have every single other one. But this game really speaks to this category to me, not just because it does have a ton of different expansions for it, but this is a game that I like, I don't love, but I keep buying the expansions because I love Marvel Comics and I love collecting the various expansions.
It's also kind of an example of how this whole, I mean, if we're going to call it a genre, lets you build your own game. There's an expansion you loathe, you don't have to have it in there. It's not baked in.
Yep. So in our broader view today, we are going to be talking, and this is actually going to be part one of two of a two-part expansion conversation.
Spoilers.
Yeah. In 2 weeks, you'll get to hear part two of this. But yeah, we want to have two different conversations about expansion content. And this half of the conversation is going to be everything before you buy the expansion. The conversation in 2 weeks is going to be everything from after you buy the expansion. And everything is definitely an oversell. Here's going to be some things from before you buy an expansion and some things from after you buy expansion will be in 2 weeks. But yeah, what we want to talk about is when to expand, when to go out and look for something, because the way the industry is built right now, the way the model of delivering product is that if a game is successful, it's going to have an expansion. It'll probably have several expansions if it's successful. And if you try to expand every single game that you have, you are going to fail at that quest.
It's just craziness.
But we used to try it. We don't do it anymore. And this is going to be a little bit about what goes into our decision process of when we buy things.
Yeah, it's axiomatic that if a game is even slightly popular, there will be more content for it. I think there's another axiom, which is even if you only have one game, even if there's one game you love and that's the only one you own, you can't throw every expansion in at once. They're almost never designed to work that way, and I can't think of a single game where they do work that way once they've had a couple of expansions. Pretty much every game will collapse either under the complexity or just by having stuff getting in its own way. I'll use Ascension as an example because it has an app, and my brother, sometimes we play these huge games where we use every single expansion because since they're cards on a phone, it's a lot easier than shuffling a 1,000-card deck together and doing it from that. But the individual expansions have a lot of flavor. They have a lot of internal synergy where there's like maybe they're showcasing some new mechanic, and those synergies can't come out when only 10% of the cards are even acknowledging that they exist. I think any game with more than just one or two expansions is going to run into that problem. And the designers probably don't expect you or want you to play with every single thing at once either.
Sometimes the designers of the expansion aren't even the designers of the original game, mm-hmm. in a lot of instances, which I suppose I do have a bit of an axe to grind against the industry for this, because I do feel that they just keep releasing new content ad nauseum, and it's getting to the point that I can't handle it. I can't keep four boxes for a single game separate. I can't stand unpackaging and sorting through expansion content if I put them all into a single game every time I'm ready to go play it. Sometimes it's great, and I do love having the options there, and I have them for some games, but a lot of game systems I've just abandoned completely because they become so bloated in my mind that I can't keep the rules straight. I like knowing when a game is designed with the game designer's intent, and that game to be a complete game out of the box, and I don't need any expansion content for it. I feel like if a game can't stand on its own and have the legs to have me keep playing it over and over again the way it was designed, something should have been done during the design phase to address that. I shouldn't need to keep buying stuff With the exception of like single play games like an Escape series or a Time series, something like that. But a game should be replayable from the box, in my opinion. I shouldn't need to a month down the road, because we're at the stage now where literally a month after a game is released, they're releasing an expansion for it already, feel the need to go out and buy that. There's no way I could have played a game to death in a month.
At the same time, it's a really important part of how the entire industry is monetized. So much of game sales is based not on you making an informed decision and going out and buying something that you know you're going to want and integrating it. It's your aunt knowing that you like this game, seeing an expansion, buying it for you for Christmas. And even if you already have a copy of it, it sits there somewhere. Or piles of it being shifted from a publisher to a warehouse to a, you know, a friendly local gaming store, and then off into the bargain bin, and then off into another set of bargain bins. They have to make more out of games that are successful in order to fuel new ones. And sometimes we see even like, so I think it's Steve Jackson Games, Munchkin is made, and he keeps on dumping out Munchkin because he wants to support GURPS. And GURPS is never going to be profitable by itself, but he wants to keep making it. And because that's what keeps the lights on, he just keeps on making more Munchkin expansions. I think that while it might seem obnoxious, as long as you accept that you can't possibly have everything most of the time, and you view expansions as more of a tip than as an actual improvement to what you've already got, that I think that's the way you have to stay sane. I think you have to just treat it as giving them more money so you can have more of what you want in the future, not a change to what you have now.
Do you guys ever see a game that you're thinking about buying, but then you see how many expansions it has, and that makes you not want to buy it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
What's an example of that game?
So I really liked the Arkham Horror series, but I'm kind of getting over that now, or I've been over it for a little bit because I played it a lot. I played it a lot solo because I'm crazy, and I had every single expansion for it, and now I'm kind of done with it, and I really like the idea of Eldritch Horror because I really love that Arkham was a very intimate setting, and Eldritch is more of like an Indiana Jones, like globetrotting adventure. But it has so many expansions, and I just don't know if I can do that again.
Yeah,
Think I feel the other way.
Really?
Yeah, because I bought, what's the card one? Elder Sign.
Mm-hmm.
And when I bought it, there was already like 3 or 4 expansions for it, and I knew there was going to be more. But for me, I look at it and I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy this base game. And if I don't like the base game, so be it. It sits on the shelf. But it kind of lets me know, like, if you're into this game and you really like it, there's a lot of places to go. Like, there's more to be had from it. So if I see some expansions, it, one, tells me people like this. It might not be my taste, but there has to be a load of people who do enjoy it to make the publishers pump out more content. And the content is there whether or not I want it. But at least the content is there if I do want it.
And I think part of my craziness at this point with the Arkham Mythos, there are characters that I really like and I feel an attachment to, so I will actually see which expansions those characters are in, and it's like, oh crap, if I want to get like my favorite team together, I'm buying 3 different expansions.
That
and that's great marketing on their part.
Yeah,
that actually does tie into something that I wanted to at least mention here, which is that developers usually design, if there are a lot of expansions, developers do often design expansions to be played in subsets. One of the games that I was intimidated from and haven't really gotten that far into is the second edition of the deck building, the Game of Thrones deck building game. It has a ton of expansions already. The first edition had a huge amount, and even though I really enjoyed it, I just don't want to make that kind of commitment. That being said, they do group together, or they did group together, expansions in, I think, triads, and I see that in Ascension as well. There are sets of expansions that use common mechanics so that there's at least some internal consistency and internal synergy, some development, and if there's 12 expansions, maybe these 3 work together and these 3 work together.
Speaking to your point too, Aaron, I think one of the games I was turned off of early was Star Wars X-Wing, because it has just a ton of content. Like, in theory, it's playable on its own, but what you really want are more ships. If you're gonna do a dogfighting game, you're just gonna want more ships, and it's costly. I think I saw one post at one point of like what the total cost to invest all in X-Wing would be. It was over like $800. There's no way I need to have this much content for this particular game.
So I'm coming at this from a war game perspective. Like, mm-hmm. that's how I got into it. For me, seeing that there is a ton of available options out there, seeing that there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of models, thousands of models in different SKUs that can be gotten, is often a sign of health. It can be a sign that it's gone way too far and that this is stock that's been sitting around on the shelf for just too long. But a lot of the time, it shows that there's room there. And I, at no point, felt like I needed to own everything, even for one of my smaller favorite games. Even Battlefleet Gothic, which of all the war games I've played has probably the smallest number of SKUs and the smallest number of factions, isn't something that I could own everything of. The really insidious thing about X-Wing specifically isn't that there's lots of ships. That's not what bugs me, because you're going to have to make choices about what mm-hmm. fleet. You're never going to take all of them anyway. You know, there's a specific squadron or whatever that you run with. It's that the cards are exclusive to those ships. If you want access to all the cards to build your deck, you have to buy every single SKU. Mm-hmm. And that drives me up the wall.
I think a very important topic, and this is a very serious topic that we haven't touched on when buying expansions, is how pretty all the boxes look together on the shelf.
I have a couple in mind.
I never keep my expansion boxes. It's all just in the base box.
It depends for me. Like, all my Dominion, because you can't put it together, wasn't put together, but they all look super pretty all next to each other. And the Ticket to Ride boxes,
they're the best.
All look really great together, especially when you have like all the little numbered ones, like they go number 1 through 6, like they all fit very nice together. And for other things like Carcassonne, all my stuff was shoved together. I like my Seven Wonders apart because I like the way the boxes line up mm-hmm. together, and they fit. The two small expansions together are the same width as the big box. Like, that's the stuff that I love seeing it on a shelf. But it all depends on what game. Like, some games, they have small expansion boxes, and I'm like, this is ugly. I'll just throw it in with the base thing. But yeah, very important.
If the appearance of the collection is a good thing, then having it being so open-ended where you have to constantly make your shelf bigger, doesn't that drive you crazy?
Both. It's a fine line, because Dominion also started driving me crazy, because there was just a tipping point where I couldn't justify anymore giving up more space to the Dominion boxes. Like, once, so for the viewers out there, most of us use the IKEA shelves that come in 1x4 and 2x4 and all that stuff. And my Dominion was two of the cubbies. Conveniently, one of the shelves was broke, so it just became one giant cubby, and that was all the Dominion. So once the Dominion reached the top of that, I was like, I'm done. I can't give more space to this. However, at the moment, it looks super pretty having all these boxes filling up this gap.
When you have a game you like, what do you look for in an expansion that makes you want to buy that expansion?
I wanted to add freshness, but not necessarily change the gameplay to a supremely more complex level. I don't want to mess with the gameplay to the point that I'd rather be playing a different game, but I want something to keep the game fresh for me. I want there to be different options. I like different scoring paths. I like different objectives that come out of play. If it's a scenario-based game, I like seeing new scenarios, new locations explored. I think of Clank, like, every time Clank comes out with an expansion, it's a different board to play. And the way the board plays changes up the way that you play the game, but the game is still the same, and I like that.
For me, I want to see more of what I already like. Or I want to see a patch. Like, if there's a problem that's become clear, I don't mind having an expansion to address that. Or if there's something that just feels like it's missing, that's good. But when I look for expansions, when the core game is set, I really just look, okay, what do I enjoy playing in this game? You know, what kind of character or what type of strategy do I like pursuing? And then look for the expansions that just focus more on that. Not necessarily so that I can be more, you know, be more fluent in it, but just so that there's more, a larger portion of game time spent on those things that I like.
Yeah, I want more of the same, but a different flavor. You think of like ice cream. If you're in the mood for ice cream, you want ice cream, but you might choose between a bunch of different flavors. And that's what I want in an expansion.
What I don't want is, and what I often fight tooth and nail against, is like new rules systems, new subsystems or mini games where I have to learn a completely separate way of doing things. Like that kind of bolt-on just drives me crazy.
Adding a mini game into an already complex game is needlessly futile, in my opinion.
Now, Twilight Imperium.
Oh my god, every episode.
Does a really good job of this sometimes, but does drive me crazy.
And for me, I definitely agree. I want more of the same. I want, especially if the game's been out for a little bit and I played it, I've gone through that deck or whatever about it over and over again, I want different variety. I want to see things that are different. I don't mind things that will add a new mechanic onto it. I think I'm more open to that than some of
I think you are than all of us, yeah.
Yeah, because I like experimenting with something. I mean, if it completely overhauls it, not so much into it, but I like seeing what you can do to spice up the system, maybe. I don't know.
I don't need... Sometimes I see... well, there's a couple that I'm thinking of that bulk this idea that I'm going to say, but sometimes expansions will fundamentally alter the game, like give you a co-op mode or a solo mode, something like that. I don't know that I necessarily need that sometimes. I often find them half-baked or underdeveloped or just tacked on. I'd rather it just focus on what the game does really well, with the exception of Orleans Invasion, because that cooperative mode is fantastic in addition to the base game.
So I was going to say, I think this is a great segue into our second part of expansion discussion, because now we're talking about, we're starting to get into the topic of like modules, and I think that is perfect for what our next episode is going to be. Cool. I think this content will fit in perfectly with our next two games.
Then let's just wrap it up here. Join us in 2 weeks, where our category is going to be Queen Games. We're going to be talking about Alhambra and Fresco. Our music was provided to us by the band Delicious Pastries. If you'd like to email us, you can reach us at menonboardpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and on Instagram at Men on Board Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Men on Board Pod. We have a guild over on Board Game Geek. Our website is menonboardpodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And we all, the inevitable pause right here where we don't know what we're going to say next.
Well, there's music that happens.
Well, yeah, no, there's actually the music.
The music is before the
happens. Aaron, what are we talking about today? I guess you just went through that. Aaron, what are we talking about first?
Well, first, James, we actually explain the category a little bit.
Right. Go on.